Shabbos Chazayin is because the Torah, which we read after Pesach, begins with the words Chazayin. Now we know that when it comes to everything in the world, especially in Torah and Mitzvahs, everything is precise, and the name of everything and anything has significance. Up to the extent that the name of everything is the essence of the thing and the life of the thing. And that's why, when Chas V'Shalom someone is sick, one of the things that might be done is changing the name, because the life which goes to the person is through his name, and when the name is changed, so the life could be channeled in a different way, and he could become healthy. And therefore, if the name of the parasha Shabbos Chazayin, so even without looking at the whole Haftarah, the word Chazayin itself expresses the essence of the Shabbos. Of Levi Yitzchak Mebarditchev gives a moshel of Shabbos Chazayin, gives an example to understand what Shabbos Chazayin is. He says a moshel that there was a father who bought for his son expensive clothes. And the son was young and wild, and the wild child made dirty the clothes, he tore the clothes. So the father took away the clothes, gave him a patch, he took away the clothes, and he told him, "You're not going to get the clothes unless you'll be a good boy." And then when he promised to be a good boy, he gave him again the clothes, gave him back the clothes. And sure enough, this wild child, the second time, got the clothes dirty, tore up its clothes. Again the father took it away, and he said, "This time, you're not getting it back that quickly." Now, father has the clothes in his hands, and the child does not have the clothes. Once a year, the day that the father took away the clothes, he shows his child the clothes, the expensive clothes. "Take a look at them, but don't put them on. It's not yours. Take a look at them. Look deep into them. You're not getting it. You're not ready for it. You're too wild." And every year the father shows the clothes to the child until the child develops a longing for it and he changes himself, and then the father gives it to him. And the obvious nimshul is that Hashem gave us a Beis HaMikdash, we made it dirty, we tore it up, and Hashem took it away. He gave us a second Beis HaMikdash, and it didn't work. Again we made it dirty. Again we destroyed it. Then Hashem takes away the Beis HaMikdash and tells us that I'm going to show it to you once a year. You're going to see the Beis HaMikdash, but you're not going to get it. You're not going to have it. You're just going to see it. And that way, the Jew develops this longing for the Beis HaMikdash, and he changes himself, and he gets the Beis HaMikdash built. What point of the year does Hashem show us the Beis HaMikdash? That's Shabbos Chazayin. Chazayin, Lashon sight, Re'iyah, seeing. We see the Beis HaMikdash. That's Shabbos Chazayin. Now the obvious question is, when was the last time any of us saw the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos Chazayin? What's the Levi Yitzchak Mebarditchev teaching us, that on Shabbos Chazayin we see the Beis HaMikdash? It's difficult for most of us to say that we actually saw the Beis HaMikdash. But I come from a different part of the world than some of you. And in my part of the world, Shabbos Chazayin is a very lively Shabbos, a very real Shabbos. And I was Zoicha, I merited to be in 770, by Fablengen of the Rebbe more than once, Fablengen of Shabbos Chazayin, where the Rebbe talked about Shabbos Chazayin. And Lev explained what it means, seeing the Beis HaMikdash. And Lev made a comment, I think almost every time I was Ben Shabbat Chazayin, within the hours of talking, he always threw in a comment that if you really want, you could sing it. Someone really wants to see, he's going to see the Beis HaMikdash. Now, I'm not sure if seeing the Beis HaMikdash means seeing a building, or it means experiencing some type of Kedusha, the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. But if you really want, you could see the Beis HaMikdash because it's there in Shabbos Chazayin. And that's when the Jew develops a longing for the Beis HaMikdash. And this is what Tisha B'Av is in reality. Tisha B'Av has two parts to it. Tisha B'Av has the crying part, where we mourn the destruction. And it has the longing part, the part of nechama, of comfort, of looking forward to the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. And Shabbos Chazayin, the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, is a Shabbos where we don't mourn. On Shabbos there is no Avelus, there is no mourning. And yet it's right before Tisha B'Av. And we know, based on what it says in Tzvolim, that Shabbos is the strength of the rest of the week. It's the koyach of the rest of the week. And we might say that Shabbos reveals the essence of the whole week in a Shabbos way. The glasses of Shabbos is different than the glasses of the whole week. During the week, we look with glasses of Yimei HaChoyu, of weekday glasses. We look at things chulindik. Shabbos is a day of holiness. Shabbos Kodesh. And we look at everything in holy glasses. And that's why the Shulchan Aruch tells us that on Shabbos, not only don't we do melacha, we're not allowed to speak things of melacha. And furthermore, our thoughts are also not allowed to be involved with melachas, things that I have to do. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us that on Shabbos, the approach of a Jew is kol melachtecha asuya. All his melacha is already done. That doesn't just mean that a person ignores reality. Now, a person who has problems with parnasa, he doesn't have a good job. A person who has a bill, he didn't pay his electric bill, and they're going to shut electricity on Sunday morning. Someone who didn't pay his telephone bill, he's not going to have a telephone on Sunday morning. He's not going to have electricity, telephone, gas, water, because he didn't pay the bills. And normally a person is worried, it's disturbing, the wife could start screaming and crying, the children need electricity. So on Friday, on Thursday, the person is worried, it's disturbing. Come Shabbos, Shulchan Aruch says, don't worry. You're not allowed to worry on Shabbos. It's a day of oimah. So what does that mean? Does that mean that a person ignores reality? He escapes reality? Is Shabbos an escape? Where on Shabbos one day Hashem says, forget all your problems, they're there. But just don't think about it. Why? Because it's a holy day and think about more interesting things, more holy things. That's not really what Shabbos is. Shabbos is not an escape from reality. But on the contrary, Shabbos brings us into the reality. Shabbos picks up the world, it picks up the Jew to a higher level where electric bills don't exist on that level. Because the person is picked up. And the muscle would be, the mitzvah, when some of you who aren't married yet will get married. So a person gets married, his thoughts are concentrated in his marriage. And any problems that he might have, like not paying a bill, doesn't disturb him because he's in a different world. In the day of a chasen, a person is in a different world. The regular problems don't exist. Usually there are people who might listen to the radio every day or television every day and they're involved, what's today's news, what's yesterday's news. But the day a person gets married, even if he'll open up the radio, it doesn't mean anything to him. Why? Because he's in a different world. That's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is a world of marriage, a Jew gets married to Hashem. And all the insignificant problems aren't insignificant, they don't exist. Because it's a day where a Jew is picked up to a higher level, to the holiness of Shabbos. But the function of Shabbos is not an isolated Shabbos, where Shabbos reveals the depth and the essence of itself, but rather Shabbos spreads to the 6 days of the week. Shabbos gives life to the 6 days. It opens up the pnimius, the depth of the 6 days. And when we use the koyach of Shabbos, the 6 days become Shabbos dikah days. And if that's the job of Shabbos, to open up the doors of what the days really are, what they're really meant to be. Shabbos is meant to implant within us that even in the weekdays when there is a bill, and even though I didn't pay it yet, but it's a reminder that, look, I am connected to Hashem. I'm connected to something higher, and Hashem could and will give me what I need. So Shabbos opens us up for the whole week. And likewise, a week where Tisha B'Av is existing, where Tisha B'Av is there, Shabbos will open up the gates of Tisha B'Av and tell us what Tisha B'Av really is, and not just tell us, but will give us the real experience of the depth of Tisha B'Av. And that's what Shabbos Chazon is. What is the depth, what is the essence of Tisha B'Av? Not the crying, but the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi. That is what is Meir. That is what is being... That's what's shining on the day of Tisha B'Av. And that's why we find that Chazal tell us which day is Mashiach born on Tisha B'Av. It would seem that Mashiach should be born any other day besides Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is destruction. Mashiach is building the Beis HaMikdash. They seem to be two opposites. But that's without Shabbos. Shabbos opens up the doors of Tisha B'Av and reveals that Tisha B'Av is the birth of Mashiach. It is the coming of Mashiach with the third Beis HaMikdash. And this explains another Chazal. Chazal tell us that in the Beis HaMikdash, the holiest part of the Beis HaMikdash was the Kodshi Kodoshim. In the Kodshi Kodoshim, the most holiest part was the Ovoid. On top of the Ovoid Kodesh, there were two Kruvim. These two Kruvim had two shapes. When Hashem was happy with Am Yisrael, they were shining at each other, smiling at each other. And when Hashem was angry at Am Yisrael, then they looked apart. They looked away. And the Gemara tells us something very, very deep concept. That when the Goyim entered the Beis HaMikdash, they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and they entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they took a look at the Kruvim, what did they see? They saw that the Kruvim were looking at each other lovingly. And this is the day of Tisha B'Av, the day of destruction. In the day of destruction, the Kruvim are looking at each other lovingly. Which means that Hashem is looking at the Jew in a loving way on the day of Tisha B'Av. On the day of destruction. Because that's the depth of Tisha B'Av. That's the essence of Tisha B'Av. The essence of Tisha B'Av is the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi. A Beis HaMikdash which is eternal. Which is the deepest connection between Hashem and the Yin. What is the Beis HaMikdash? V'osu l'mikdash v'shachanti b'seichon. Hashem rests within the Jew through the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash Shlishi is the highest degree of the Shachanti B'Seichon. That's why it can never stop. Why is the Beis HaMikdash Shlishi an eternal Beis HaMikdash? Because it's the highest degree of Kedusha, a Kedusha which cannot stop. The first and second Beis HaMikdash was also Kedusha, but it was such a Kedusha which is subject to change. It's subject to, through sin, it goes away. But the highest level of a Shechanti B'Seichem, where Hashem is together with the Jew, that's the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi. And that's what the Goyim saw on Tisha B'Av. On the day of Tisha B'Av, they saw the third Beis HaMikdash. They saw the two Kruvim looking at each other in the highest level of love to each other between Hashem and the Jew, and between the Jew and Hashem. And the explanation of this, how is it that on a day of destruction, on a day when Hashem lets out His anger on the Jewish people, He lets out His anger against the Jewish people, how is it that on that day we have the third Beis HaMikdash? On that day we have Moshiach being born. On that day the Kruvim are looking at each other lovingly, dust on the day of destruction. And the answer is that precisely because Hashem is hitting us, He's giving us a patch, that's why He loves us more. Because I'm not going to patch someone, a child, who's going to do something wrong if he's not my child. My child whom I love, he's going to get the patch from me. Because I love him. Now a father finds it very difficult to patch a child. The father who loves his child cannot hit his child. It's difficult. It's easy to give a kiss to a child. It's easy to buy a present for the child. It's difficult to give a patch to a child. And that's why a father who doesn't patch the child, he doesn't hit his child, he loves his child, but it's not a real love. It's not a true love. A true love is the father who could patch his child even though he loves his child and because he loves his child. And that's what takes place in Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, Hashem says He's changing channels. Up to Tisha B'Av, He kissed us. Up to Tisha B'Av, he hugged us. He gave us presents. That's a loving father. But then if we reach a point where Hashem loves us so much, to such a degree, where because of His love He gives us a patch, which means that on a deeper level, the patch which Hashem is giving us in Tisha B'Av is an expression of the deepest love and connection between Hashem and the Jew. But that love is so deep and so high that it cannot find expression in a kiss and in a hug and in a present. It cannot find an expression in a revealed way. It has to be in cloth, in garment, in something else. In something which is gvura, in something which is anger, in something which is a patch. Just like a father will patch his child, that's anger. And in a revealed sense, that's separation. But that's an expression, that's the garment of the highest degree of connection. That's what Tisha B'Av is. And that's why when it comes to Shabbos Chazoin, Shabbos which reveals the depth, the pnimius, the essence of the whole week, Shabbos Chazoin is the opportune day for us to see the Beis HaMikdash, to see only the deeper part of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av has two parts. It has the crying and the hoping for the Beis HaMikdash, looking forward to the Beis HaMikdash. Shabbos only has one of those two parts. It has the Beis HaMikdash itself. And that's what the Baal Tichuva says, that in Shabbos Chazoin Hashem shows us the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi. Let's understand the difference between the avodah of a Jew during the Beis HaMikdash, the way he serves Hashem during the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, and the third Beis HaMikdash. Three different ways of serving Hashem, where the Jew goes through three different tests of serving Hashem. And there are three different choices which a Jew has to choose in the first, second, and third Beis HaMikdash. Now let's understand that the second Beis HaMikdash was different than the first. The second Beis HaMikdash had a different function than the first Beis HaMikdash. And we could see this from the fact that there were five things missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. And five essential parts of the Mikdash were missing, including the Olam with the Luchos and the Kruvim. In the first Beis HaMikdash, we had V'shachanti B'Soicha in its totality. In the second Beis HaMikdash, we did not have that completely, because there were some things missing. There was something lacking in the V'shachanti B'Soicha, in the marriage between Hashem and the Jew. And perhaps one of the reasons for that is the function of the second Beis HaMikdash was a preparation for the long and terrible goals we're going through. The first Beis HaMikdash purpose was for itself, was for the time and period of the Beis HaMikdash. There should be the Shachanti B'Soichom within the Jews as long as the Beis HaMikdash is there. But when it comes to the second Beis HaMikdash, that's different. There the Kedusha is not just for that isolated period, but rather it's there to give us Kedusha even during the time of Golus, even the time of darkness. We should still have the V'shachanti B'Soichom. So perhaps we could say that the first Beis HaMikdash was something totally above and beyond the level of Golus. As a matter of fact, Chazal tell us that the 70 years between the first and second Beis HaMikdash, in certain senses, had more holiness than in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, the purpose of the first Beis HaMikdash was for itself. The purpose of the second Beis HaMikdash was to give us the strength and energy to go through exile and remain the way we should be, remain connected to Hashem. And even though Hashem kicked us out of the Beis HaMikdash, He kicked us out of His house, He kicked us out of His palace, but we're still wanting with Hashem, that comes from the second Beis HaMikdash. And we see that also from the fact that the first Beis HaMikdash corresponds to tzaddikim. The second Beis HaMikdash corresponds to Baal Teshuva. And we see that from the fact that the second Beis HaMikdash was built only after the Jews did Teshuva. The first Beis HaMikdash didn't need Teshuva. It just needed tzaddikim. The second Beis HaMikdash wouldn't be built through tzaddikim, it needed Bali Tshuva. And Chazal tell us that the Mokim Shebali Tshuva Indim, there is an advantage in Bali Tshuva which don't exist by tzaddikim. A Bali Tshuva, because he went the wrong way, whether it's his fault or not, and yet he returns to Hashem, in one hand that's a greater strength, that's a greater energy, and that's the second Beis HaMikdash. It came through Avodas HaTshuva. And Avodas HaTshuva is the Avodah, is the service of Hashem in the times of Golus. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, especially the first, Tzaddikim, that was the mood, that was the atmosphere, that was the approach of serving Hashem. There was holiness all around. The second Beis HaMikdash, there was less holiness. It was an element of returning to Hashem from a distance. And that's what Tshuva means. And that's why it says in Likutei Torah that the world makes a mistake. The world thinks that who does Tshuva? A sinner. A tzaddik doesn't need Tshuva. And that's wrong. The Gemara tells us, Kol Yomav B'Tshuva, a person has to spend a whole life doing Tshuva. And a tzaddik who lives a whole life has to do tshuva every day. Because tshuva means returning. You're far and you return to Hashem. Far doesn't have to mean from a sin. It could be from any level. You could always go higher and return more and more to Hashem. In the first Beis HaMikdash, the Jews were in the palace of Hashem. V'shachanti b'seichel was literally, there was the ocho in the luchos, the Jews were indoors, inside, tzaddikim. The second Beis HaMikdash, we were outside. Even during the Beis HaMikdash, there was a lack. There was something missing. That was the time when we had a Beis HaMikdash to introduce tshuva, which is the strength we have throughout Golos, to go back to Hashem from wherever we are. And then when we get to the third Beis HaMikdash, the question is asked, what for? What are we going to do in the third Beis HaMikdash? It's going to be forever. I don't know what kind of evil will exist in the third Beis HaMikdash that time. What are we going to do? What's our function in life? So we're going to discuss now the first, second, and third Beis HaMikdash. And this is based on a Medrash. Medrash says that all the Shevatim, all the 12 tribes, their names have significance. And significance on two accounts. One account, every name of the Shevatim, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, represents Geula, redemption. And on the second account, they represent the pride and happiness of the Jew. And the Medrash deals with one of the Shvatim, namely Asher. The Medrash says that Asher means, Asher represents the Geula, based on a pasuk, V'ishku Eskem Kolagoyim. When Mashiach comes, the Goyim will be the ones that will strengthen us coming back to Eretz Yisrael. And that's where we see that Asher represents Geula. Where does Asher represent the praise and pride of the Jews? So this is a pasuk of Asher Ha'om Shekoch Eloi, Asher Ha'om Shashem Eliko. Where do we say that? So the message continues, Ein Yishuvan Shel Yisrael. The pride, the praise of the Jew is only by way that they chose Hashem and Hashem chose them. And when Asher brought a korban, why did he bring the korban? Because Hashem chose us. That's what the message says. Now we're going to analyze this medrash to understand what's the concept of choice. Choice could only be in one of two ways. Either when two things are the same, or what's the other way?
They're different.
When each one has an advantage over the other. But when one is better than the other, there is no choice. If that's the case, when we choose Hashem, who else would we choose? What's the other choice? And when Hashem chooses us, who else should He choose? Huh? Should He choose Muhammad? Who should He choose? Who should He take? A Jew has holiness, a Jew has a neshama. Who should He choose? But to understand this, there's a muscle, an example, which another medrash gives. This is a medrash on Eichon, which we will read this Tisha B'Av. How do I know we're going to read this? I'm sure you're all going to jump on me and say, Mashiach comes before, so why should we read? We should read the Megillas Esther, maybe something happy. The answer is no, we're going to read Eichon, we're going to see the pnimius of Eichon. We'll see how Eichon is the depth of connection between Jew and Hashem. So I can assure you that this Tisha B'Av, even though we're expecting Mashiach to come, we're also going to read Eicha, but not in a crying way, in a happy way. So one of the psukim of Eicha is Chelki Hashem Omro Nafshi, which means my chelek is Hashem, my portion is Hashem, Omlo Nashi, my soul says. The soul of a Jew says that what's my portion? Who do I choose? Hashem. So the Medrash tells us a mashal on that. A melech, a king, comes to a city, and he has with him ministers. Duchsin, Ipachin, Stratilutin, different names of ministers. Now, different people in the city. One person says, Anon Nesiv Duchsin, I want the Duchsin, the minister of health. The other one says, Anon Nesiv Ipachin, I want the minister of the treasury minister, get some money that way. And the third one says, I want the third minister. There was one pikeach there. What's a pikeach? A sharp fellow, intelligent fellow. Right? And he says, I want the king. Anon Nesiv Malka, I want the king. And he says, why? Why do I want the king? The kulu mischalfin, all the ministers could get changed. The king could kick them out. But malko lo mischalfin, the king doesn't get changed. That's the muscle, that's the example. What's the nimshal? The goyim, some of them serve the sun, some of them serve the moon. But the Jew, they serve only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what the pasuk says. My portion is Hashem. The Jew says that my portion is the king himself. Now in this we have an obvious question. Does it really take intelligence to choose a king? Someone who's not that sharp won't choose the king. What's going on over there? Furthermore, when this real pikeach, intelligent person, finally chooses a king, why does he choose the king? He makes a whole calculation that all the ministers can get changed. The king won't get changed. Is that why he's choosing the king? And if the ministers won't get changed, would he choose the ministers? So what's going on in this medrash? Now this could be explained in three different ways, and each of these three different ways is the first, second, and third Beis HaMikdash. The first way is as follows. When we deal with the subject of Avodah Zarah, we know that the Torah puts a major emphasis in Avodah Zarah. As a matter of fact, the first of the Ten Commandments and the second of the Ten Commandments relate to Avodah Zarah. And Hashem mentions Avodah Zarah in Torah Shebichtav, in Tanakh, time and again. Perhaps the most common mitzvah in the Torah is Avodah Zarah. Now the question is, who really wants to serve Avodah Zarah? No one. Who's interested in Avodah Zarah? There are other things you want to do. Other things might be enjoyable. But Avodah Zarah is mostly uncommon, for the most part. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, in the times of Avraham Avinu, in the times of Terach, in those days, Avodah Zarah was popular and common. Now, what was the big Avodah Zarah? Why was it so common? What did they take? They took a stone. They took a wood, they bowed down to it, they brought korbanos to sacrifice to it, they served it, they idolized it, that was Avodah Zarah. Now, we all know the story that Avraham Avinu, how did he come to recognize Hashem? He started talking to the stones and the wood, he saw that it's bubble mice, there's nothing to it, and he destroyed it. Now, does that mean that the people in his time were fools? Is the Torah addressing fools by telling us on the Ten Commandments? The first two are telling us, the first Two of the Ten Commandments are telling us, don't serve Avodah Zarah. Who's the Torah talking to? Who's the Torah addressing itself to? Now, we could say that they were all fools, but that's foolish. The first Oivdei Avodah Zarah, the original ones, the one who started the movement, were intelligent people. They were philosophers. They had a way of life. And there was sense to it. They were wrong, but there was sense to it. There was intelligence to it. And this is explained in the Rambam and in other places what their mistake was. And they said as follows. A king who has ministers, does the king want that people should honor the ministers? The answer is yes. So they said, look, the sun and the moon are ministers of Hashem. Hashem made them, appointed them to shine in the world. So Hashem wants they should be honored. And that's why they serve the sun and the moon. And they said as follows. Let's take an example of a minister, a treasury minister who gets money from the king, and he has to do whatever he does with the money. So the sun gets his energy from Hashem, and it distributes its energy throughout the world, just like a minister. Furthermore, they said, when a minister gives us something, should we thank him? We have to thank him, even though he got everything from the king, but we thank the minister. Why? Because the minister has a choice to give or not to give. And if he gave, you say thank you. That's what they said about the son. The son has a choice to say yes or no, and if it says yes, you serve the son. Now, those people were more sophisticated than we are now. Those people weren't just involved with the sun and the moon, they were involved with what's called mazolos. What's the name for mazolos? Huh?
Constellation.
Oh, you all know what that is?
Horoscopes. It's a group of stars.
Oh, but it's
astrology not. Is more of the.
We know very little about mazolos, very little of that. They knew much more. Furthermore, Chazal tell us that every nation, how many nations are there? 70 nations. There are 70 Sarim, 70 angels upstairs who are the boss of all the nations. That's why, where do we find in the Chumash, by the way? Where do we find the Sar of a nation in the Chumash? We find this, huh? But Yaakov, the angel of Esau. Okay, right, where else? Huh? Eugen Sichon, where else? Mitzrayim. But in Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim also find that. Every nation has a Sar Lomailo, an angel Lomailo. Now we don't see them. We don't experience them. We don't experience them as always. But going back thousands of years, the people were so sophisticated, they were able to relate not just to the apple, but where the apple came from. There's a certain koyach, strength, a certain mazel l'mayla. Through that mazel, the apple grows. And this is mentioned in Gemara. The Gemara says that there's no apple, there's nothing which grows, unless the mazel upstairs tells it to grow. We don't see the mazel, we only hear about it. They saw the mazel, they experienced the mazel, they understood the mazel. And when they served kichovim u'mazolos, you know, what's the terminology used in the Sfarim Gemara for goyim? What are they called? Akum. Why are they called akum? Oivdei kichovim u'mazolos. They serve stars and mazolos. Who are the mazolos? The mazolos are spiritual forces which come before the apple. They make the apple grow. Now, of course, Hashem is the one that made the apple and the mazolos, but the mazolos are there. They're real. We don't relate to it. They did. And they served the Mazalais. They served the Kechavim because they were on higher levels and they could relate to it. Now, their mistake was, what was their mistake? Because the sun and the moon and the Mazalais are Kegazen B'yad HaChoytzev. It's like an axe in the hand of the one that cuts the tree. It only has the function of an axe, of a hammer, which has no choice. It can't decide to do anything. That's the function of the Mazalais and the Kechavim. That's their mistake. But they felt that the Kechavim Mazalais have free choice to give or not to give. Furthermore, if you serve them, you'll get much more. You'll get more blessings, more good things. That was their mistake. And therefore the Torah has to tell us time and again. And the Torah has to begin the first of the Ten Commandments, the first two of the Ten Commandments. Be very careful with Avodah Zarah. Because the Torah was addressing people who were on a very high level. They were very sensitive. They were able to appreciate the Mazalis and the Kechavim. And they were very close and susceptible to serving Kechav Mazalis because they experienced it. And that's the one the Torah is addressing. Now, let's translate that to everyday life, in our life. We keep on thinking, when we read the Chumash, that let's take the generation of the desert, the Deir HaMidbar, they were fools. How many times did they sin, get punished, and then sin again? Didn't they learn, couldn't they learn the lessons from last time? And this keeps on going time and again, they sin, they get punished, they sin again. This doesn't make sense. Were they fools? What's going on? Now, if they are fools, then we're also fools. Because we go through the same experience time and again. We also, unfortunately, relate to Avodah Zarah, perhaps in a subtle way, but really Avodah Zarah. If Avodah Zarah means that there is a choice on the part of the Kechavim Mazalais, whether yes or no, and therefore they are idolized, then we could find that very same thing in our lives. There are things which take place in our lives which we also idolize. Now, I see most of the people here are young, aren't married yet, so don't understand too much what money is. But there are many people who idolize money. There are many people who idolize food. What's food? Food. Ochel. What's food? Food is something which Hashem is nice. He wants to give us energy. Koyach. If we're not going to eat, we die. Chas v'shalom. If a person doesn't eat, he dies. That's what it says in Halacha. Hashem. Hashem, in his kindness, wants to give us strength. How does he do it? We eat bread. Bread does not give us life. That's a mistake. Bread cannot keep a person alive. The koyach of Hashem in the bread could keep us alive. Not the bread itself. And this is why the pasuk says, Lo yal halechem levado yichyeh ha'odam. The person does not live from bread alone, but rather al kol moitzi pi Hashem yichyeh ha'odam. There's a moitzi pi Hashem, it's the word of Hashem, the strength of Hashem within the bread which keeps us alive. So why do we eat? Not because of the bread, because of what the bread possesses, the koyach eloki. So that's the case. Does it really matter if the bread has sugar in it or not? Does it really matter? I see that you give me tea without sugar. The stam is because if, what's the main thing? To get the koyach from the tea. So who cares if there's sugar inside or not? So if that's the, oh, so if you're looking for koyach from the sugar, so then you might go to the doctor and say, do you really need the sugar or not? And then he might give you a secret that all the energy of the sugar you have in the bread anyway. It might be disturbing, or maybe he might tell you only one teaspoon. So what are we looking for? Person has a choice to eat healthy meat or oily, not healthy meat. What's he going to do? What's he looking for? Is he looking for the koyach eloki? So you take the healthiest food that has the koyach eloki, pure. Someone takes the tasty, oily, juicy, sweet cake. What does that mean? What's he looking for? He's looking for, he's idolizing the cake. Not the cake being an avenue to giving me the koyach eloki. Bread would do just the same, or even a better job. But the person is idolizing something. There's something that has importance in my life. There's something which I give importance to other than Hashem. That's avodah zarah. Now, something more severe. I'm working, I have a job. My boss screams at me. He doesn't like the way I'm doing the job. And I start getting nervous. I need a panasim. I'm not going to have money. What am I going to do? Yes, boss, whatever you say, I'll do. That's avodah zarah. Do I get my panasa from the boss, or do I get my panasa from Hashem? That's the issue. If I get my panasa from Hashem, then the boss is just a way. That's how Hashem gives me. It's kegazim yad achoitzev. It's an act which is used by the person who splits the tree. That's all he does. But chas v'shalom to say, that is a human being that gives me parnasa. The parnasa comes from Hashem. And we see that people who get nervous and tense, they might be fired from a job, they try to find favor in the eyes of the boss, they get nervous, they lose sleep, and they're forgetting about Hashem. Instead of turning around and saying, maybe I'm not doing enough mitzvahs, maybe Hashem wants to take my panasa because I'm not serving him enough. I have to serve him more. The person gets nervous and says, the boss, I have to give him a present. I have to be nice to him. That's a void of that's man saying that Kechavim and Mazalos have free choice to give me or not to give me. But instead of saying Mazalos upstairs, it's a physical person down here. That's exactly a void of.
But people do have more free choice than Mazalos and Kochavim, don't they?
No one has free choice if I'm going to have Pandas or not. Maybe I have free choice, but no one else. And likewise, when Chas v'Shalom, someone comes over and hits me, do I get angry at him or not? Well, of course, he hit me, chutzpah, how dare you hit me? That's avodah zarah.
But you might still want to do something to be able to fall into the job. You might be deserving of a parnasa, and not for a small miracle to be have to point out necessarily a big miracle that you don't even have to do.
The Lord that way. A person has to work al pi teva and realize that the blessings from Hashem. Part of working al pi teva is not spitting in the face of your boss. That's part of the way of the deva, but not to idolize the boss, not to feel that the boss depends on him. Chas v'shalom does not depend on him, it depends on Hashem. So I have to act normally to my boss. I have to never respect him also, but not because it's up to him. Because I'll be Torah, there's a certain way I have to act. That's all. If someone hits me and I get angry at him, or I lose my temper, how dare you hit me? How dare you speak against me? I'm so great and you're so low. How did you do such a thing? I lose my temper. That's Avodah Zarah. Because if a Jew would really believe in Hashem, if he would really believe that everything comes from Hashem, then the one that hit me, as far as I'm concerned, has nothing to do with me. I got hit because Hashem decreed so, not because Mr. X decided to hit me. Now, it's true, Mr. X who hit me, he's going to be punished for it. Because he used his b'chira to sin and go against the Torah. He'll be punished. But that's between him and Hashem. As far as I'm concerned, between me and Hashem, nothing happens in this world. No one gets hit unless Hashem decreed someone should be hit. And the second I say that I got hit, I got hurt, because someone chose to hit me, and not because Hashem chose that I should get hit, that is Avodah Zarah. That's believing that Kechovim and Mazolos have free choice to give me or not, and a person has free choice to hit me or not. Now when we come and we hear that there are hostages of Yidden in Lebanon, that the Yidden are praying to Hashem that the hostages should be free, and the soldiers did something, they took away one of the big goyim, one of the big goyim that we dissolved over there, they took one of them away. If we're to think that it's up to that goy if the hostages are going to be freed or not, that's Avodah Zarah. It's not up to Bush whether the hostages will be free. It's not up to Bush whether we're going to have phantom flames or not. That's Avodah Zarah. We have to go to Tampa. We have to go to Bush and say, listen, could you please give us? We need a place to defend ourselves. We have to explain him why. But it's not up to Bush. It's up to Hashem. And if Bush decides to give us planes, he's benefiting from it, not us. We're going to get it anyway. Whatever we're destined to get, we'll get. And what we're not destined to get, we're not going to get. The shaila is just that Bush will be the lucky one to be zoicha, to merit to give us the planes, or he's going to lose his merit. But we're going to get the planes anyway. And this is something which constantly we go through in life, time and again, the test of Avodah Zarah, and sometimes, and maybe more than sometimes, we fail the test. So when we go back to history and we look at the Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the desert, when we look at the generation of the first Beis HaMikdash, where they sinned with Avodah Zarah and Hashem punished them, and then again they sinned and again Hashem punishes them, were these people, like they say in Hebrew, metum tamim, were they really not normal? If they weren't normal, we're not normal either, because we go through the same Avodah Zarah sometimes, time and again. We lose our temper at some people, and that's why the Gemara says that kol hakoyes, whoever gets angry, kill over the Avodah Zarah. Because it means you're forgetting Hashem. And you believe that someone has free choice. That's Avodah Zarah. And this was the first level of Avodah Zarah versus Hashem, where the Goyim chose Avodah Zarah, because the Goyim saw and felt that they get through the Avodah Zarah, so they idolize the Avodah Zarah. And the Jew, who is the Pikeach, the smart one, what's the intelligence of a Jew that the entire creation, including the angels, including everything, is just kegazim v'yadachotzer? It's only a tool in the hands of Hashem, and nothing more. There is no importance whatsoever. And it's interesting that throughout history, throughout our exile, There were times in every generation when the Jews had to go to the Goy, to the big Goy, and ask and pray to the Goy, take away the decree. Don't make us suffer so much. And history has shown us that there has constantly been two approaches, a successful one and an unsuccessful one. When the Jew approached the Goy with an inferiority complex that we're below and you're on top of us, and we asked the Goy to help us, very often we failed. But when the Jew approached the Goy with Jewish pride, which means that I'm the Jew and you're only the Goy, the Shegut, and only because we're in Golos, Hashem made it, He punished us that I have to go over to Him, but really you're not important and you're nothing, I'm above you, that's when the Jew was successful. And that's why the Rebbe tells us that in our generation, when we go to the UN and we present our case for Eretz Yisrael, the approach that has been going on all the time is that the Goy of England, the Balfour, or whoever, whichever other Goy, they gave us Eretz Yisrael. Which means that what's important is what the Goy says. And that has been a decisive failure. We have not convinced the Goyim of our rights to Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbe suggests, why don't you try the old method of the Torah? Well, Rashi, the first Rashi of Chumash, the first Rashi of Chumash tells us what, how to talk to Goy. You tell the Goy, listen, Hashem created the world, He's the big boss. There was a time when He gave it to the Goy, now He gave it to us, and that's it. Nothing to discuss, no two ways about it. That's Rashi's approach. And that approach has never been tried, and that's why we failed. And that's where a Jew has the strength of revealing his pikchus, his intelligence, to recognize that all the goyim, the kegalim, the adachoitzer, they have no importance whatsoever. And we have to serve Hashem, and of course go al piteva, but the main thing is to serve Hashem, and that's where the Pikeach chooses Hashem. This is one explanation. And this is the test which the Jews always had, but especially in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, where they had the test of Avodah Zarah. But then we have a second explanation, deeper explanation. A deeper explanation which corresponds more to the mussel of the Medrash, where the people of the city were saying, one was saying, I'll take the duchsin, one of the ministers, the other one says, I'll take the ipachin, the other minister. That means that in the mussel, the ministers really have free choice to give or not to give. So in the Muslim, the example of Medrash, the Pikeach is surrendering profits by not choosing the different ministers. He could have gained. And this brings us to the second understanding of the free choice of a Jew. The Goyim, at one point, at one level, know that all Avodah Zarah is really nothing. They're not fooling themselves. They're not making a mistake. They also know the truth. That Avodah Zarah kechol mazalos is nothing. Then why do they serve Avodah Zarah? Simple reason. There are two ways to receive from Hashem. One way is a way of Kedusha, the other way is a way of Tumah. When a person serves Hashem through Kedusha, then you have to deserve it. You have to earn it. You don't earn it, you don't deserve it, you don't get. If you want to get your strength, your blessings, through the vessels of Klipa, of Tuma, you don't have to deserve it, you'll get it anyway. That's one difference. A second difference, when it comes to Kedusha, even when you deserve it, how much do you get? It's limited. When it comes to Tuma, impurity, if you want to get through impurity, you get much more. That's the two differences. So the guy says, why should I serve Hashem? That goes contrary to the nature of a guy. A guy doesn't want to nullify himself before Hashem. And that's what serving Hashem is all about. Not what I enjoy is important, but what does Hashem enjoy? What does Hashem want? To surrender everything I enjoy for the sake of Hashem. And surrendering my own enjoyment is not something the guy is ready to do. So the guy says, why should I subject myself to get through Kedusha? That's too severe, it's too difficult. And of course, if I'll get through Tuma, I'll get much more. So the goyim say, let's serve Avodah Zarah, let's get our hashpah, our blessings through Klipa, through Tuma. Comes the Jew and he says, it's true, we'll get less, it's true, it's difficult, but I'm not a Siv Malka, I want a king, I want Hashem. I'm ready to get less, but I want to have Hashem. That's the second level of Avodah Zarah. Not where the guy makes a mistake and really believes that the Chacham Hazalah is, it's up to them. It's not a mistake. It's a different level. It's a different degree of getting life, food, and health. You could get it because you deserve it, or you could get it when you don't deserve it. They choose to get it when you don't deserve it.
So the Jew will get more.
Oh, we'll soon get to that. We'll soon get to that. Now, that's the reason which the Pekeach said, why do I choose the king and not the minister? What was the reason?
He never changes.
The king doesn't change and they all change. What does that mean? That's the point you were saying. That when is it that the goyim get more and the Jews get less? That's only bizman hazeh, nowadays. But after Mashiach comes, the table turns around. The goyim don't get hashpa. They lose what they get. And the Jew not only gets a spa, but he gets even more a spa, more blessings than the goyim got till now. And that's what the Pekeach says. All the goyim, they change, they're not going to get, we're not going to change. We're going to get till the end, much more. But if that's the case, then the nimshol doesn't make sense, because all this madness was based on which pasuk of Eicha? Chelki Hashem Omro Nafshi. The Jew says that my portion is Hashem. And when you say that my portion is Hashem, it's not because of the vachim of what you gain. It's not because you want to get a bigger profit. It's something beyond that. A Jew chooses Hashem not because he makes a mathematical calculation that it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile. Get much more. Now I'll lose, but I'll get more later on. It's a business deal. You invest, you lose, and then you reap the profits later on. That's not the deal the Jew makes when he chooses Hashem. The Jew chooses Hashem because Hashem is my chelik, he's my portion. That's why the Jew serves Hashem. And the reason Medrash tells us that the king doesn't change and the going change, that's something else. That means that when the going, when they get now Rashba, it's not emes. It's not true. Because the test of emes, as we discussed the last several weeks, is if it remains or it doesn't remain. Something which remains, which is eternal, that's emes. Something which is subject to change is not emes. And that's what the Bikayach says. It's true that the goyim get more blessings now, more aspo now, but that's not real, that's not emes. The proof is it's mischalfim. It's going to change eventually. They're not going to get. That shows that now it's shepherd. Mashayin Ken, when it comes to the Jew, gets from Hashem, that's everlasting, that's the emes now. So the Jew isn't looking into the future, he's looking into the present. This is emes and this is shekel. And this was the test that the Jews had and have in the times of Golos. In the times of Golos, if you look at the history, what was the nisayon, the choice that you had to make constantly in Golos? The goyim tried to force us to change religion. That was a constant threat and a constant problem that we always had. Because of that, we were kicked out of countries. Because of that, we suffered economic persecution. Because of that, we suffered all types of sufferings because we decided to choose Hashem. We lost money on the deal. We lost life on the deal. We lost everything of Olam HaZeh because we chose Hashem. It was a matter of choosing Avodah Zarah, literally. And then we would have Kavod Melachim, the honor of kings. Any Jew who smad, who changed religion, he became a king. He became on top in Olam HaZeh. He got everything, he got honored, at least superficially. The Jew who went on the nefesh to serve Hashem throughout our terrible exile was surrendering all the gashmis just to serve Hashem. This is the second Beis HaMikdash, this is the time of Golos. Now let's understand very clearly that in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, the opposite was true. If you chose Hashem, you gained economically. You have to turn it around. Huh? It's the end. You have to stop.
That one stops.
In the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, if the Jews served Hashem, that's when he received economic blessings and all the blessings. If he didn't serve Hashem, that's when he lost on the deal financially. There was no test in the first Beis HaMikdash whether to serve Hashem and lose money. It was the opposite. Serve Hashem and you got money. You don't serve Hashem, you lose the money. And this has been failed in the Torah. If you do Torah mitzvahs, then what happens? Then you get all the blessings of Hashem. And that's exactly what took place in the first Beis HaMikdash. And whenever they sinned, that brought war, that brought famine, that brought suffering. So the choice in the first Beis HaMikdash was not surrendering pleasures. On the contrary, it was worthwhile. If you didn't work on Shavuos on the seventh year, you didn't lose money. On the sixth year, you gained so much more. You had all the blessings. So it was worthwhile financially. That wasn't the test of the first Beis HaMikdash. What was the test of the first Beis HaMikdash? Koychavim u'mazolos. They were so spiritual, those people, that they saw the spiritual strength of the mazolos, and they felt that they had to serve them, not to gain necessarily, but because they deserve thanks. They deserve to be served. That was the first degree of Avodah Zarah. But that's not the Avodah Zarah of Golos. The Avodah Zarah of Golos was not so much to serve the Kichol Mazalos, but rather, are you going to surrender Gashmius or are you going to get Gashmius? Now, if we look into Eretz Yisrael, many people who chose to come to Eretz Yisrael, most people perhaps, they did it surrendering Gashmius. They're ready to come here and learn in a yeshiva and in a kollel, even though they're going to lose Gashmius. They could stay in America, make a buck, make money on it. And it's true, you learn less Torah maybe, but you could gain. So we have such a choice. It doesn't have to be Dafka Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael also you could have this choice. You could have that choice in Chutz La'aretz. But there's a constant choice. Take a look in America. Go out to the west, to the east, and you see people have money. Not all, but a lot. They have cars. They have a couple televisions. They have a swimming pool indoors. Could you imagine such a thing? Indoors, your own swimming pool. It's Mamish Gan Eden. Now the swimming people, the religious people over here, I don't believe they're all batlonim, they're all so old-fashioned, they can't go in the States and make money. But yet the Jew has a test, he has to make a choice. A choice, what are you looking for? Do you want the money? Do you want the gashmius? Or are you ready to surrender that and choose Hashem? This is the constant choice of your second golus, second Bais HaMikdash. And this brings us to the third Bais HaMikdash, where the choice is more subtle, and before the third Bais HaMikdash, which is our days, we are going through that choice in a very severe way.
Which this?
We're going to discuss this soon. Because we know that Erev Shabbos, you have to taste the foods of Shabbos. This is Shulchan Aruch. Erev Shabbos from Chatzos, you don't take Tachanun, because Shabbos emanates to Erev Shabbos. The 7,000th year when Mashiach comes, before that, the period of Shabbos, Yom Shekulei Shabbos, it starts shining before Erev Shabbos. Before Mashiach comes, you already have the shine of Mashiach. So therefore, the avodah of the third Bais HaMikdash is already beginning nowadays also. And this is a very difficult thing to explain. And I don't think we have the time to explain it at length. We probably have to explain it in short. And over Tisha B'Av, you think about it, you probably understand it better. Sometimes a person has to make a choice, not between evil and good, but between good and better. Now if we look, we go back to the example of the Medrash. The king came with his ministers. Those ministers are ministers of the king. They're not bad. They could be good. Now, if we would try to find the parallel of those ministers in good, maybe they're angels or things like that, holiness. Sometimes a Jew has to make a choice between holiness and higher, and the king. And the Baal Shem Tov gives a beautiful example for that. On a pasuk in Tehillim where it says, "Tfilo la'oni kiyatoi lifnei Hashem mishpech sichoi." It says there was a time when the king says, "Open doors, anyone could come in." So people come into the palace, they go into the first room of the palace, and they get absorbed in the richness, the paintings, the diamonds, it's spectacular. They can't break away from it. They're like in a trance. They never saw such richness in their lives. And certain people who have the inner strength, they break away. They break away, they go to the next floor. But then they're stuck. As rich as the first room is, the second room is much more. And they get entranced in the second room. They're there, they're stuck. They can't go away. But this open door policy is only for one day. So these people are looking from the morning, they're there from the morning till the night. They're looking there. Then comes in one person, Pikeach. He goes in, he sees people, Meshugoyim. Where's the king? He goes to the next room, sees some people there. Meshugoyim, he goes weiter. He's looking for the king. He goes to the next room, until he reaches the most inner chamber, and he goes to the king himself. The king asks him, what do you want? So he says, I have one request. Only one request. I want to be able to speak to you every day. I want to be able to come into you every day. And that's what David HaMelech says, Tefillah La'oni. What's the tefillah of a poor person? Lifnei Hashem Yishpech Sichoi. To pour out his words before Hashem. That's the tefillah of an oni. Now, the first room of the king is holy. Hashem has a lot of rooms full of holiness. There's a first room of holiness. There's a higher level of holiness. And people could get entranced and involved, absorbed in holiness. And they could forget about the king. A person could open up a gemara and learn a whole life, blot after blot of Gemara, finish the Shas, and forget about Hashem. Now, there's the famous joke, of course, not a real story, where a person came over to his Rav and he says, I had a terrible dream, a tragic dream last night. What was the tragic dream? So he couldn't speak it out. So the Rav says, tell me, speak it out. So finally he's able to says, he hints, I dreamt that kvayochol, so to speak, that you know Hashem, as if chas v'shalom, he's not here, chas v'shalom, he died. He couldn't speak it out, he died, chas v'shalom. And it's bothering him. The dream was bothering him. It's, you know, it sounded like the dream was, it was real in the dream. So the rabbi tells him, nothing to worry about. Why not? Because what you think about by day, you dream at night. You must have thought about it by day, so you dreamt about it by night. But nothing to worry about. So this person says, Rabbi, you're making a mistake. Believe me that the last 40 years I haven't thought about Hashem once. I haven't thought about Hashem. So that wasn't the reason I dreamt about it. A person could learn Gemara. And forget about Hashem. A person could daven to Hashem. When you daven to Hashem, it's very difficult to forget about Hashem. Very difficult. When you learn, it's easy. Open up a Gemara and show me how many times did you find Hashem in the Gemara, the word Hashem. In the Gemara, it's a very uncommon word. Shoy on ax is very common. A ganav, a loitzeyat, a killer, that's common. The word Hashem, uncommon. Very easy to forget Hashem. Open up chumash, daven. I mean, you have to remember Hashem. But that's the second room. You could forget Hashem there also. You could forget about the king. You could get so involved with the holiness of daven, you could forget about Hashem. How's that? Simple. Very simple. A person goes through a challenge. A first challenge might be, should I serve Hashem or not? But when the Jew decides to serve Hashem, there's a second challenge. Should I serve Hashem when it's enjoyable to me? It's tasty? It's sugary? Or should I serve Hashem the way He wants I should serve Him? It's both holiness. Don't make a mistake. But it's two levels of holiness. One level of holiness says, I'm going to open up a gemara and I'm going to become a gadol. I'm going to become a, you know what a gadol is? A big person. You know, that's enticing. I'm going to become a gadol. So far, I learned two blood. How many blood does the gadol know? 2,000 blood. So I'm, how many percent of him? How much?
0.1.
0.1, right? Okay, I learned 200 blood. How many am I? I'm already 2%. I'm getting closer and closer to becoming a gadol. That's one way. It's enjoyable. I'm becoming greater. But then the other Jew says, one second, what does Hashem want I should be? Hashem wants I should be a gadol, or Hashem wants I should serve Him? And serving Hashem has nothing whatsoever to do with becoming a gadol. Forget about becoming a gadol. Serving Hashem means doing what Hashem wants. Hashem wants I should daven. Daven. I should learn Torah. I learn Torah. Don't do becoming a gadol. Okay. So Hashem wants I should give tzedakah or give tzedakah. Now we see that there are certain people who are good in learning. They get involved. They might be poor in tzedakah. To give away their money, b'chol maidecha, that goes tough by them. Certain people who are good at giving away money, it's difficult to stand and learn. Certain people are good at giving tzedakah. Good. Good at giving money in learning Torah. But davening, pouring out your heart in davening, it doesn't go. Certain people are good at davening. You know, they can really give out their neshama davening, but learning or tzedakah is difficult. Every person has his line. You have the person who has his line in davening, learning. He's a big god in learning. But is he a god in tzedakah? Does he give a lot of tzedakah? Does he help a lot of people? Not necessarily. Is he gone and davening? Which means that he really davens like you should? Not necessarily. You could have a gone and davening. He davens like a tzaddik, but he doesn't learn like a tzaddik. So the tendency of people is to serve Hashem based on your nature. What does your nature mean? What's appetizing for me? One person will find an appetizing to learning. You make chidushim. One person will find appetizing in davening. Forget about the whole world. Let's go to the kosel. Let's put on short black pants and long socks. You know, let's put on all different types of clothes. And let's go around not looking at anything. Davening, you know, what? Davening all the time. What about learning? What about tzedakah? Maybe not. Different things are appetizing. That's not the chamber of the king. That's the first room. That's the second room. But that's it. That's not serving Hashem. Serving Hashem means that you serve Hashem whether it's appetizing or not. If Hashem wants and expects al shloisha dvarim, the olam oimer, the world stands on three things: Torah, tefillah, and tzedakah. If that's what Hashem wants, then who cares what's appetizing for me, for my stomach? I'll do what's appetizing for Hashem. And if Hashem wants everything, then you do everything, whether I enjoy it or not. And this brings us not just to the individual issue, but an issue of Klal Yisrael. Should our efforts be based on building up a koilo, or should our efforts be based on saving Klal Yisrael? There are millions of Jews who are dying spiritually every day. A churban based on Middash taking place every day. Jews are intermarrying. Jews are chas v'shalom dying every day. Is it our responsibility to think and worry about them and do something about them? Or forget about Klal Yisrael, forget about the millions of Jews, I am becoming a gadol. We're going to have a yeshiva of Gdol Yisrael, forget about the millions of Jews. Now this is an issue of Klal Yisrael in our generation, where some people come with the answer, if someone comes to us, Kol HaKavod, we'll take them with open arms. But that's not our job. Our job is to become Gedolim, to become big Jews. Another approach is that you need everything. You need a koilo, but you are responsible for Klal Yisrael. You have to worry and do and help other Jews. And not just the Jew who might go into my yeshiva. The Jew will never go to my yeshiva. You have to make sure he has a mezuzah, and he puts on tefillin, and he doesn't marry a shiksa. That's also our responsibility. And this is a choice of the first rule. What's appetizing, it's easier. We gain, we benefit, we become gdolim. Or going to the king himself. Forget about our gains. What does the king want? Does the king want we should forget about his children who are dying? Pikuach nefesh doicha kol ha'tera kula. And if we're dealing with spiritual pikuach nefesh, it's also doicha kol ha'tera kula. Are we going to forget about bonim atam Hashem aleikeichem? The fact that every Jew is a ben to Hashem and say forget about him. Or, no, Hashem wants we should worry about him. And even if it's difficult for me, it's difficult for us, it might be that I won't spend a whole life in Koilo. Maybe I might only spend 10 years in Koilo and then go and help other Jews also. What is the answer which we are giving to Hashem? And that depends if we're happy with the first room, the second room, and some people even the third room, or going to the king himself. What does the king want? Is it my joy of what Kedusha I see, or it's what Hashem wants? Now, this is a topic which our generation, more than any other generation, is being challenged with. All the other generations, or most of the other generations up till now, almost didn't face this issue as much as we face it now. And for many reasons. One of the main reasons was there was never a generation where we had the choice and the ability to change Klal Yisrael, to save Klal Yisrael, as much as we have now. Because in our generations, those Yidden who don't serve Hashem, it's not their fault. They're tinnik shenishba, they were never taught anything else. And if we teach them, they'll change. And the reason why our generation is confronted with such a choice, not between serving Hashem or not, but more than that, how should we serve Hashem? In a way of the first room, the way it's appetizing, or how does Hashem want, even if it's not appetizing, is because that is the avoid of the third Beis HaMikdash. In the third Beis HaMikdash, where the Yetzer is killed, the Jew won't have a choice to serve Avodah Zarah or not. What is the test of a Jew then? What's his choice then? Whether he's going to serve Hashem in a first way, the first room, or he's going to break away and serve Hashem in a higher way. Is he going to serve Hashem in davening so much Kedusha, so much holiness, or he's going to break away to even a higher level, even when it's difficult? And this is what the Baal HaTanya used to say. He used to say, and this is something which the Rebbe Shlita repeats a lot of times, and it's a rule that whenever the Rebbe repeats this, you could hear in his voice a cry. The Baal HaTanya used to say that I don't want your Gan Eden, I don't want your Olam HaBa, I want you yourself, I want Hashem. Now this is the Balat Tanya who had an understanding of Gan Eden and Olam Haba. Not people like us, we don't know what it's all about. He understood Gan Eden. And he's the one that says, I don't want Gan Eden, I don't want your Olam Haba, I want you yourself. Now what does that mean? We have to understand what that means. It's not a choice of Hashem or Gan Eden. The choice is that if someone wants Hashem, that means that the flame, the fire who has a flame, goes up to its source. The flame won't exist anymore. The longing of the Balat Tanya, of a tzaddik, is to go up to Hashem and forget about me. I don't exist. I'm not here. When a Jew goes and gets united to Hashem, he doesn't exist anymore. It's only Hashem existing on that level. So it's not a choice of Gan Eden or not. It's a choice of me being here or me not being here. And when someone wants Gan Eden, when someone wants Olam Haba, he wants himself. He wants the joy of Gan Eden, the pleasure of Gan Eden. And the Balat Tanya says, I don't want the pleasure of Gan Eden. I don't want the first room. I don't want the second room. I want Hashem. That's a non-nasiv malk. My rotzen is Hashem. Even if I'm not going to have all these riches, I'm not going to have the first room and the second room. That's not what I'm looking for. Now our job in the days remaining till Tisha B'av is number one to be melamed tzchus on Yidden, which means to think good on Jews and speak good about Jews, Avas Yisrael. And we have to know that all Jews have good parts, and so we have to stress and Chas V'Shalom, we're not supposed to look at any faults of a Jew. And even though before we talked about Jews who might be in the first chamber or the second, but we have to know that every Jew has milas, and that it's for sure that they're looking to serve Hashem in the best way, and they mean it the way in the Shema, and all Jews are trying to do the best to serve Hashem, and therefore Hashem has to bring Mashiach, because it's long overdue, the time for Mashiach to come. And we have to these days add in tzedakah, tzim b'mishpat yipodim shiva b'tzedakah. We have to give more tzedakah than usual. Another penny, something more. We have to learn more Torah. And that's what it says at the end of the Torah of Shabbos Chazon. Tzim b'mishpat yipodim through Torah, mishpat is Torah. And through shiva b'tzedakah. And especially those halachas which relate to the Beis HaMikdash. That's the way we build the Beis HaMikdash nowadays, like it says in Medrash. So we have to add an Avas Yisrael, and Tzedakah, and Torah, who's the Beis HaMikdash, and that way we'll be zeichah to be in the Beis HaMikdash even before Tisha B'Av.
Before we don't go back. Before the word ends.
Well, mazalas exist in different levels. Generally, there are 12 mazalas. That's why we have 12 months. And those mazalas existed from the time of creation.
There's not one for every nation.
Besides that, on a different level, there are 70 souls, 70 like angels on top of them. So before the Torah flow got, there was basically one major one. All part of one major one. But then it broke up.
It's not these they themselves divided.
Right. And this is similar to the fact that there are 600,000 Jews. That's why the Torah mentions 600,000. You know, there are many more. Because each 600,000 general neshamas, and from there are like branches to many more neshamas. Likewise, the habitat by the nations, they used to have many one, and then it broke off. 70. That's why we have 70 korbanos. That's why we have 70 people came to Mitzrayim.
70 parot.
Okay.